To order, the public hearing on the 219 tax levy will now come to order. Ms. Moak, roll call, please.
Mrs. Buttermer?
Here.
Mr. Curry?
Here.
Mr. Estes?
Here.
Mr. Guzman?
Here.
Mrs. Hill?
Here.
Mr. Wilbach?
Here.
Dr. Herman?
Here. On November 11, 2019, the Board of Education of Glen Allen School District 41 adopted a Truth in Taxation Act resolution for the 219 tax levy. The tentative levy was placed on display and made available for review. The board will take action on the 2019 tax levy during its regularly scheduled meeting, which follows this hearing. To date, the district has not received any requests for public comment to be read into the record. Members of the public who wish to address the board should complete the blue public hearing comment form and hand it to the board recording secretary. She will call your name when it is your turn to speak. I would like to remind members of the audience that speakers should identify themselves and limit your comments to 3 minutes or less. In order to maintain the consistency of public participation, I will inform the speaker when there is 30 seconds remaining and stop the speaker at exactly 3 minutes. Any information left unfinished can be handed to the board recording secretary. Any? None? Brian. May I have a motion to adjourn the public hearing?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
The public hearing is now closed. Thank you very much. We will now call to order the regular December 9th meeting. Mr. Lobach, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Moak, roll call, please.
Mr. Curry?
Here.
Mrs. Buttermer?
Here.
Mr. Estes?
Here.
Mrs. Hill?
Here.
Mr. Guzman?
Here.
Mr. Wilbach?
Here.
Dr. Bruno?
Here. We will now have our superintendent reports. Melissa.
Wonderful. It's in keeping with past meetings where we've started with a celebration video. I would like to introduce the video from the Kindness Club at Hadley. As we talked about at the last meeting, I think I gave them a short compliment. This is a group of kids who have really come together on their own to reward and acknowledge acts of kindness around the school. So I'm going to turn it over for you, and I know it's important for you to know the kids produced their own video.
Hi, I'm Sam, and me and Ms. Welsh and some other classmates met up in a group. We were thinking of trying to boost the fun and the kindness. We brainstormed some ideas, and one of our classmates told us about the kindness cards that they did in their elementary school. We liked the idea, so we decided to tweak it and call it the Secret Kindness Cards, and Amy will explain the cards. So the cards first started out in my elementary school, Abraham Lincoln Elementary School, and it's where if somebody got the card, and then they would look for people doing kind things and giving them the card. On the back of the card, it says Secret Kindness, and it says, "You have been caught being kind. Print your name on the line below and look for kindness as you go. Pass it on to someone you don't know." And then there's four lines. So when you get the card, you will write your name down on the line that, well, whichever line's open. And then if there's lines left, then you give it to someone else who's being kind. And basically, once if you're the last one to get the card, you write your name and it's on the fourth space, that there's only four spaces, then you put the Secret Kindness card in your math class's bin when it's full.
Do something that promotes the district motto of district for everyone, when we are choosing to include everyone.
Secret Kindness starts when we get back from Thanksgiving break on December 2nd.
First drawing will be at lunchtime on December 12th, prize days, December 13th, 16th, 17th, 18th, and 19th.
Our goal for this project is so Hadley has kindness and it has a lot of fun. Also, the fact that we want everyone to feel included, socialize, and have someone to sit with at lunch or someone to be their friend.
Thank you!
All right. wonderful. Their own idea.
Absolutely. It's their own idea. It's a wonderful group of kids, so I can't wait to see what they do with this. And I've offered to bring over lunch one of the days as one of their rewards. So looking forward to having lunch with two kids. I shared that I'm also new, so it'll be great for me to make some new friends over at Yappin.
I think you mentioned that the awards are not things.
Right. So they've worked really hard for the rewards to be no cost.
Yeah.
What I had said that I would be very happy to do as kind of their big reward for the month would be to whoever has the most, has their name in the most for acts of kindness. But I really left it up to them to determine how this is going to work. That I would like to bring lunch over for them and they can invite somebody to join them. Maybe it'll be me, maybe it won't. But, you know, a lot of this is about making friends and meeting people that you don't know there. So it's just one more opportunity for somebody to invite someone that they don't know to sit down and enjoy lunch together.
This is a group of four or five kids?
No, it's a larger group than that. I want to say there were maybe 12-ish. We have to see. I met with the whole group when I did go over, but it was a larger group than that.
Okay. Nice. Very nice. Anything else, Melissa?
No. Next item, not regarding the video, but next item is just a quick update so you know what to expect on my entry plan. Hard to believe, as of January 1, it will be 6 months. They have really flown by. What you can expect is that I will give the board a written summary and share out and do a smaller presentation in a board meeting. But Erica and I are going to work on a series of short videos highlighting some of the important things that have emerged that I've learned about the district or want to report back on to the board and to the community. So we'll be putting together and developing some short video clips that we could use in multiple ways. And just kind of a, you know, kind of a reminder, but I thought this was a good time to say it, that, you know, the listening and learning part is never really over, but it's been difficult. You know, most people in the superintendency are more type A personalities, so to sit back and really just listen and just learn is not my nature. It's been hard. So, you know, it's really, you know, for me, it's about, I'm going to ask the board to indulge me, because while this is your meeting, I hope that now that we're wrapping up the entry plan that I might have a little bit larger voice at these meetings, just because there is so much to report on and talk about that's happening in the district. So not that the listening and learning is over, but as this piece of the entry plan is being wrapped up, I feel like I don't have to sit back and be as quiet as I have been the first 6 months. I've learned a lot about District 41 in these 6 months, and I'm very happy to report back and share out. And again, our focus is on not only on celebrations, but it's also focusing on where are our opportunities. So I'm very happy to share that with the board.
Well, we'll look forward to hearing your more robust voice and in future meetings. Thank you. Thank you, Melissa. Board reports. Are there any reports from board members?
I have a couple.
All right, Ted.
I attended the Hadley PTA meeting on December 4th. It was a fairly short meeting, but the big item was they approved $6,500 in curriculum enhancement grants to various classrooms. I have a list here. I'm not going to read the whole list, but things like clinicians for the music classes, or some portable net system for the PE for badminton class, and some human body model organ things for the
what? Oh, how are you going to get that through customs?
Yeah, right. Well, just the models for the health class. I thought that was really nice. Theater tryouts started today and continuing tomorrow and Wednesday. They have a dining out fundraiser on the 19th at Chipotle. And they did this month Golden Apple recognition for Mrs. Heidi Han, her literacy teacher, Mr. Ben Gronke, foreign language, and Mr. Ian Armstrong, the art teacher. And the person who nominated Mr. Armstrong mentioned an interesting parents' art night, family art night that he organized that apparently went over really big. And I have a second one. The Ben Franklin PTA meeting on the 5th. Their drama club has begun. The play is scheduled for May 16th and 17th. They tell me that they do a big production every year. I'll have to check it out. They have a family night coming up on January 24th with an 80s theme, complete with vendors, DJ, and dancers.
Dancers?
Yes.
Dancers and body parts. Body parts over at Hadley. Right, going on.
Their Read to Succeed program starts rolling out in early January. Students can get Six Flags tickets like previous years. They have an innovation expo for students on February 19th. This is a new event, and they've been working with Mr. John Bauer on age-based activities. They've got a dining out fundraiser on December 17th at Chick-fil-A. No, wait a minute. Is that right? Yes, Chick-fil-A. That's correct. And apparently, if you have any catering orders that you need to pour over the holidays, that would be the day to do it. You order it on the 17th for later, and they get credit for doing that. They have set up a giftcrowd.com site for staff gifts. And that sounds interesting, where rather than having to send individual gifts to all your, to your kids' teachers, you put in an amount, and then it gets aggregated, and then the teachers can select gift cards based on the amount, and they get a list of all the people who, not how much they gave, but, and then they also have a trivia night fundraiser coming up in February, and that has an Oscars theme.
Outstanding.
I have all kinds of stuff going on.
Yeah, kind of. There you go. I can't believe it. Very good. Thank you, Ted. Thank you. Others?
I just have one little thing. Just as a parent, I went to the chorus concert at Hadley for all of the elementary schools. I've lost track of what day that was. Wednesday, maybe. But Lincoln and Franklin and Churchill and Forest Glen, all their choruses got together and sang four or five songs, and they did a great job. The kids were having fun, and they had one practice together, and then they had a concert together, and I was really impressed at how well it all went together.
Beautiful.
Did a good job. So that was a great event and fun to see as a parent.
Thank you. Wonderful. Jess, you have something.
I attended the Forest Glen PTA, and Dr. K was there as well, so it was nice to see you there and that you're trying to attend at least one or more for all the PTAs. And it's super well organized. I didn't take great notes. There's so many activities and they just were like boom, boom, right through them. But it's nice to see at Forest Glen they hold their PTA meetings in the evenings and they have a pretty even distribution of dads and moms at the meetings, which was just nice to see. That's not always how it is. I was also able to attend the Partnership for Educational Progress, which is the foundation that District 41 is a part of, along with all other feeder districts into District 87. So it's kind of like a Glen Bard and feeder district foundation, for those who aren't familiar with it. Erica Nelson is heading that as the current president, and she continues to reinvigorate what it is that we're doing. We had Dr. Larson at our meeting, which was a nice change, and he came and talked to us focused a lot on the kinds of work that we can do in equity, which later we'll talk more about equity in relation to what we did at III. So it seems like a topic that all of the districts, ourselves and all of the feeder districts in District 87 are really talking about. So I think there's some really good work that can be done there. We're excited about it. And then I get some timely mail, if you'll indulge me a second. If you're as lucky as me, you may have today or in the next few days gotten a supervisor of assessments letter that tells you the value of your home is being increased. And I just wanted to point it out because we've gone to a few sessions about how property taxes work.
Right.
And if you've gotten one of these, I want to point out that you have 30 days to file an appeal. It's pretty straightforward. On the top right, it tells you what exemptions you may or may not be applied to your tax bill. And on the back, it tells you what those are. So just want to encourage people to be mindful. It's a busy time to get a letter like this. If you need to appeal it for some reason, you have 30 days to do that. And also, the DuPage Regional Office of Education annual report came today, and I made risotto for dinner, so I had time to read it while I stirred. So a lot of good stuff. I think we should all feel really grateful that we're in DuPage County as a school district. It's one of the best counties in Illinois in terms of what the regional office does for education, and a lot of good stuff in here. Things I flagged first of all, DuPage District 41 participates in the Supporting Effective Educator Development Grant, the SEED grant, and there's just a really nice write-up about what it is that does, and it's going to be our second or third year that we're participating in that grant. I didn't mark what that is, but super good stuff. And then there's a new one. It seems new to me. The Federal Bureau of Justice Assistance awarded DuPage County with the Students, Teachers, and Officers Preventing School Violence Grant in October. So the acronym for that is STOP. And so the goal over the next 3 years is to have qualified trainers working with educators in their buildings to better support students with trauma and mental health issues, restorative practice, and circles, trauma-informed practices, and other opportunities to be facilitated. So that's something that's happening in DuPage County that I'm sure at some point District 41 will hopefully benefit from. And also the ROE hired an equity leader. I think you're hearing the theme equity, equity, equity. That was all the talk, at least for the things that I went to for III. Deep equity. I'm not quite sure what that means exactly, but I'm sure we'll learn a little bit more. But there's apparently an equity university that is being started as part of that, and some workshops through the Administrator Academy. So all that stuff looked really good. I wanted to point out too. Here's the SEED thing. So the SEED grant that I mentioned before examines the interdependency of the principal's time utilization, distributed leadership practices, and thorough analysis of all types of data to determine a root cause of student learning problems. And I just know in talking with Lisa Schweikoffer, who was the principal at Lincoln until this year, found that extremely valuable, one of the most valuable PDs that she's done. So just great that we're a part of that. And later we're going to be talking about levy and our audits and the comprehensive annual report. And I just thought it was interesting that there's some programming on the Regional Office of Education and homelessness in our county. And in the 2005-06 school year was when that started to be tracked. And there were 269 homeless students in that year served in the county. And this 2018-2019 school year, there were 1,823 homeless students. So I just think that speaks to the changing demographics and situations and why we're having conversations about equity, why we're talking mm-hmm. about all the different supports that mm-hmm. we've put mm-hmm. forward. Mm-hmm. So... thank you for indulging me. That was a little long.
Well, thank you. Melissa, you were...
Can I piggyback just before we move on? The SEED grant, just that you're referring to, you'll start to hear as the individual buildings make the report, you're going to hear about the learning that they've done in relation to cycles of inquiry, because mm-hmm. that's where all of this has come from. Mm-hmm. So every principal and team has already started to work on those, and I know you'll hear how that's impacted the individual buildings through their report. So very interesting. And I would also say that after being in Cook, Will, Kane, and DuPage, DuPage by far has the best regional office of education. You don't see this anywhere else. There are many, many resources that we benefit from, and they're always a step ahead, which is very appreciative. You know, we appreciate that. So compliments to them, and I didn't know that went out, so I'll have to look for that.
Very good.
I'll just give a disclaimer.
Disclaimer.
Check your out about Jessica's timeline as to the appeal period for your property tax appeal. It does not constitute legal advice, but please check your own assessment reports to determine any applicable limitations periods.
Thank you, counsel.
I just remember in the presentation it was a short time, and you were coming in the holidays.
Duly noted. Good. Anyone else?
Action.
No? Well, thank you. Thank you all. Public participation. Members of the public who wish to address the board should complete the yellow public participation form and hand it to Mrs. Moak. Speakers are asked to maintain respectful decorum and limit comments to 3 minutes or less. Is there anyone who would like to make public comment?
Karina Buckley.
Karina Buckley.
All right. Karina Weckley, two kids at Lincoln, fifth grader and second grader, and a couple weeks ago I had the pleasure of going on a field trip with the fifth graders to one of the local senior living centers as part of their kindness initiative for the year. So the plan is for the kids to establish a relationship with seniors and visit them, I think, three times throughout the year, and in the interim become pen pals and things like that. So anyway, so we went. And no one really knew what to expect, because this was the first time that it was done. And we were plopped down in the middle of some seniors who were of varying moods, some a little cranky, some a little hard of hearing, some memory challenged. But you know what? The kids did a really nice job. The reason I chaperoned is because they were asking for parent volunteers, because they were anticipating that the kids might need assistance. Did nothing. I basically stood around and talked to the staff, because the kids did such a nice job accommodating the different moods and cognitive abilities, you know, entertaining them. They did crafts together. We had balloon volleyball going. And there were tears on both sides when they had to leave, because they enjoyed their time so much. Plans were being made of coming back independently over the holidays. So overall, you know, just a really nice initiative, and kudos to the Abraham Lincoln fifth grade team for coming up with that.
Wonderful.
That's it.
Thank you, Ben. Thanks for sharing that. Anyone else? Thank you. Okay, we will now move into our presentations, and first up is the fiscal year 2019 audit presentation, and Eric will introduce our guest.
Yeah, I'm honored to introduce you to Nick Cavalier. He's a partner on our account to Baker Tilly, and he's here to present our audit as of 6/30/19.
Good evening, everyone. I believe all members of the board should have a copy of the district's comprehensive annual financial report.
Thank you.
It has a picture cover. There's a separate document that I'll also go over as well. Whenever the auditor comes out to talk about the comprehensive annual financial report, what you want to understand is that the responsibility of the external auditor is to render an opinion on your financial statements. Management is responsible for financial statements. The type of audit opinion that we were able to render on your financial statements is what they call an unmodified audit opinion. It's the highest level of assurance that you can receive from an external public accountant that the financial statements prepare in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles and have the necessary material disclosures. That's the level of assurance that we've provided on your financial statements in prior years. So great job to the business office for maintaining the books and records in order for us to be able to render such an opinion. Our audit was issued on November 7th. And from that time frame, the documents have been submitted to the State Board of Education, Federal Clearinghouse, things of that nature. So, you know, filings that are required are underway and should be completed, you know, in time, so to speak. With the comprehensive annual financial report, there's a lot of different schedules. The governmental financial statements are very lengthy, sometimes a couple hundred pages. With a comprehensive annual financial report, you have a lot of historical information, statistical information, demographic information that's at the rear of the report. One of the schedules that I always typically like to just kind of go over very briefly with the board is an income statement, and I believe it's going to be on page 17 and 18. Within a comprehensive annual financial report, there's budget to actual schedules that will follow this. There's detailed notes to different amounts that are reported in the financial statements. But what my focus typically is with the board is on operations. And your fund financial statements speak to your operations of the school district. So this particular schedule is a statement of revenues, expenditures, and changes in fund balances. What happens is you have your funds presented in columns. You have your revenues at the top, expenditures in the middle. This category, about a quarter of the way off the bottom, called other financing sources and uses, and in the current year that's been used to account for transfers between funds that were approved by the board in prior years, for transfers in addition to the proceeds from bond issuances. In fiscal year 2018, the district issued debt, and the proceeds were accounted in that category. You'll have the net change in fund balance at the beginning of the year, and fund balance at the end of the year. So it essentially kind of gives you the big picture of the district's revenues and expenses and ending fund balances. On page 17, I like to always let more so this is kind of your ongoing operations. Your general fund for reporting purposes includes the Ed Fund, the Working Cash Fund, and your TORF Fund. You'll see those separately when you budget, but for external reporting purposes, those are all consolidated together. The operations and maintenance funds for the most part managing the district's day-to-day operations in the buildings, transportation for moving students between home and school, and then the IMRF fund is used to account for essentially expenditures related to pensions and Medicare, so to speak. But what I always say is, look at this particular page and look at your excess deficiency of revenues over expenditures. Are you operating within your resources? Are you deficit spending? Is there structural inherent deficits? And that's not the case here at Glen Ellyn School District 41. So your operations are working within your means. You'll see that in your general fund there was a transfer out of $1.8 million into your capital projects fund, which is on page 18. Capital Projects Fund is being utilized to account for the expenditures related with the bond issuance that took place last year, in addition to other facility work that's ongoing. You'll see that the Capital Projects Fund started the year with $22.6 million and ended the year with $10.6 million. I had a brief conversation with Mr. DePorter before the board meeting this evening, and it's my understanding that fund has been drawn down to about $1 million or so currently, which is anticipated because the work that's been ongoing in fiscal year 20 will pretty much be wrapped up and maybe concluded by early fiscal year 21 because of the staging of all those projects that happen over the summer when the children are in the buildings necessarily. So, ultimately, when I look at your district's financial results, they are consistent with what I've seen in prior years, and there was nothing of alarm during the audit process itself. Are there any questions on the CAFR itself?
Board members, please.
I guess some of the language, and maybe this is in the little black board also, but there's a lot of language about what this audit does and what it doesn't do. And what it doesn't do is do internal controls audit.
Sure.
And so, and the last one that we had was done, I think, was in 2008. And I guess my question for you is, when is it appropriate for us, the board, to consider a measure that kind of goes above and beyond this audit into an internal controls audit? Is it a frequency? Are there particular triggers, like findings from an audit like this, that would tell this board that that would be something that we should be looking at?
Sure. So I'll go into a little bit about what we cover under our financial statement audit, and then I'll elaborate a little bit about this internal control review, which is a different scope than a financial statement audit. So under the current auditing standards that are in place, the external auditor is required to gain an understanding of the controls that are in place in preparation of the financial statements. We're engaged to render an opinion on this document itself. So in order to do that under the current auditing standards, we have to gain an understanding of your control structure over how the inputs are going into this document. So in K-12, they're very consistent. It tends to be your accounts payable cycle, your payroll cycle, your financial close, so how are you monitoring your monthly reports, journal entries, the treasury function, how bank reconciliations are being performed, and then some very general IT controls. You know, what is the controls that are in place to ensure that the data is available, hasn't been necessarily corrupted, no passwords, security rotations, things like that. So we walk through all those as part of our audit process. And the purpose of that is so that we can identify risks in your cycles so that we can tailor our audit approach to address those risks so that when we render an opinion, we don't do so incorrectly. We don't actually provide any assurance. You're absolutely 100% right. We don't provide any assurance over your internal controls. We actually disclaim an opinion saying that we don't do that. However, under the standards, if we identify risks in those processes that we believe meet the criteria under the standards of material weakness or significant deficiency, we'll communicate those to the governing body and to management. And the type of risk that we've reported in the past years, which I believe at this point has been kind of an accepted practice, not only at the district, but through all many other school districts throughout the state of Illinois, is that we prepare, you know, year-end adjusting entries to take your internal accounting records to the GAAP basis financial statements. We prepare this document. Many school districts don't have a full-time CPA on hand that stays concurrent with all of these standards. They'll engage the auditing firm to perform this as a service. We meet with management, we discuss the results, they take responsibility for that. That's the risk that we've identified in your processes. Now, I can't say that in previous years there were some things that were identified regarding segregation of duties and monitoring controls, and at any time that we've identified some of those comments, we found that management's been very, you know, apt to addressing those and implementing, you know, procedures to address those things. So in the current fiscal year, we didn't identify anything that we felt met the criteria of which to report back to the Board of Education. So you're right, the last time that a full-blown kind of an internal control walkthrough was done in 2008, I remembered actually doing it at that time. And it's very detailed. You're looking at the transactional level, you're looking at the systemic controls, the accounting systems, you know, you're pulling all this information together. It is also kind of like a roadmap for your processes, and then in there you're looking for the controls and making recommendations for improvement. You know, when is the time to do that? I have clients that haven't done it since 2008. And they haven't even thought about necessarily doing it. I have a client that every 3 years brings me in to relook at it and do some very specific procedures on certain classes of transactions and report back to them what our findings are. So everybody's a little bit different, and I think it's really, you know, I wouldn't say a best practice that's been recommended or anything. It's really what you feel that you want to see in your organization. School districts don't have internal audit functions. You know, you just have the business office that's processing things. Internal audit would add some value in the sense of, like, looking at processes, making sure they're being done, you know, providing feedback to those who are doing it to improve upon, but they never see that. And even in the biggest school districts, you know, that you do see it at, there's one person doing that. You know, so it's not very common. Typically, the transactions are complicated. You know, it's processing bills and paying payroll based on contractual amounts. You know, the withholdings and things like that are generally well maintained in the software systems themselves by the vendors. So, you know, again, I can't tell you what I think is a best practice, because you really have to look at what your administration is currently doing right now in regards to that. Is there a need? Is there a concern that you want to have yet another layer of external assessment taking place on those processes?
And I remember we discussed this, was it last year? And I don't have my notes in front of me, but we can go back and pull those and see the conversations that we had regarding that. I think it was last year.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Jess, did you have?
Yeah, I guess, you know, in the reports that are here, there's nothing that says to me that we would need to do something like that now. I guess the reason I'm asking is because it's been a decade, then that says, well, do you just do that regularly? But I'm hearing that it's not, it would be more predicated on what we were seeing in these annual.
It could
audits.
Be, yeah. You know, I have a few clients that have had a high degree of turnover, and in some instances have at the same time converted their accounting systems. You know, when we come in to perform the audit, their balance sheet isn't necessarily making a lot of sense. They're having challenges with reconciliations. You know, the budget to actual processes aren't built into the software. Mm-hmm. You know, there's significant room for improvement. I don't see that here right now in my, you know, in my scope of the audit, so to speak.
And if I could, I would imagine if there were some indicators, they would probably be noticed internally, and they would rise up from Eric's office, and then we would be in relation, we would be in conversation at the board, and then we would be reaching out to, it would be that first contact level.
Would this type of audit mainly look at something, you know, wouldn't look at little stuff, but mainly look at large discrepancies and...
Sure. So a financial statement audit is really kind of designed to identify material.
Material, that's what that's the word is.
With this particular type of a process that I'm envisioning it is, you're looking at the process. So you say, okay, we're going to buy something. How do we do it? What are the different ways that we procure goods? What are our policies that provide the guidance to the administration to follow? What are the statutes that are also in place? You know, like when you have to go out to bid, things like that. What was a purchase order originated at the building level from? You know, a clerical employee, and it's how it's approved, and then the flow through to the board fills us for approval. You know, very minute detail all the way through. And then now you would then amplify that by looking at the systemic controls and software. Are there hard stops that prevent something from going from start to finish too far by the same person? You want to look for segregation of duties controls. And you're also going to want to layer that in with competency controls. Who's monitoring those outputs? Is there a detailed budget that's being built and managed on an ongoing basis? What other benchmarks are being applied to make sure that things are being monitored, and if there is a discrepancy, that it's investigated and corrected on a timely basis? You know, you don't want us to find it necessarily. You want to find that internally by management, because management is really responsible for your internal control design and effectiveness, so to speak.
Thank you. Jesse, do you have another question?
Yeah, just one more on this. You're obviously very knowledgeable. This was a really informative document.
good way to describe it.
I don't know how much fun anyone's going to have reading it, but I have a lot of highlights. So I think in terms of giving a big picture, a big high-level picture, there's a lot of good information consolidated in here. And I had fun with this statistics section, which gives a 10-year view, which I thought was really fun is not the right word, but
that was your word. We're sticking with
that. But yeah, it was super interesting.
I've spent a lot of time with it.
I haven't seen this information.
It's terrific.
All put together like this, it was really useful. So thank you for that. So clearly, very knowledgeable about all of this, and you've done this for a lot of districts. What do you think, beyond the fact that we've made, which is clearly a wonderful celebration, that we have the highest level of assurance, in your opinion, of our financial, I don't know the right word to use, not our internal controls, but of the financial statements. Well, what else in here should we be looking at relative to what you've seen in other districts that are cause for celebration? Because there were some things that I noticed, but I kind of wanted to hear from you.
Well, you know, I've been here for several years in different capacities, to be quite honestly. Is, you know, when I first started working for my firm until the time that I become a partner. So I've had a lot of history with the district. And what I always look at is there's a plan. You know, here is the plan, you know. We have these resources. What are we going to do with those resources, and how are we going to provide that level of service to our community? And you can see that plan underway. You went through a referendum, you commissioned that. You're building on your buildings. You're executing that. You're utilizing, you know, operational resources in addition to bonding. There's a plan. There's a long range plan. It's not just, you know, whatever happens from one year to the next. There is a long range plan, and that is extremely important to have in place. And I believe that that's what the role of governance is to say, what is our plan? What do we want to execute here? You know, and you have those resources, and you're putting them to the highest and most need that you all see fit. So, you know, I think when I look at your financial statements, I see a plan that's being executed.
Thank you very much. Other board members, any other questions for our guest?
Thank you for having me here this evening.
Well, thank you so much.
Holiday season.
You also. Appreciate the great work. Thank you very much.
Just a note, I'm just in the statistical, I'm happy to see that we're still at 3,100 and 3,200. enrollment district. They may change with
it may.
Some of the buildings that are going up, but yeah. You know, that was always.
Are we talking about this?
No, I'm looking at the back part
of the statistical stuff.
Probably
the 10 years.
Those 10-year statistical assessments, I think, were interesting to look at. There were some changes worth noting.
My question is, Nick, are you going to...
You know what, I actually did, in part of the conversation is segued into the reportable potential findings, which we can send a financial report.
Right.
That was kind of my spiel.
I thought I heard it when you broke over,
but if you have another question, I'd be more than happy to take it.
Did you just?
I have three, sorry. I didn't realize we shifted books.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry, that's okay. I guess the one material weakness that you did mention, I think you already alluded to it, but just to get it out there, what percentage of school districts would you say are in this exact situation where they have this material weakness, which is the fact that we don't have...
High 90%.
Yeah.
High 90%, okay.
Very high. You know, some of them report on a different basis of accounting. You may not receive it. But your district chooses to use the modified accrual, which is the GAAP, which is the gold standard for which, you know, accounting is reported on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, most of the time you don't have somebody in the house that does the accrual work. And it's becoming very complicated, quite honestly. It keeps us busy. I mean, this is, that's all we do.
Right, right. Okay. And then on page 8 of this report, there's mentioned that we were, because of an upcoming change, or that in June 2017, there was some new guidance by the Government Accounting Standards Board.
Sure.
For an upcoming lease standard, that we should begin to establish a lease policy. Is that something that you expect we would see come through press?
You know, unfortunately, these standards don't necessarily align with, like, press, which is probably more regulatory and statutory. The accounting standards are more about disclosures and how you report amounts in the external financial statements. They don't necessarily speak to what your policies should be. So what you want to do is you want to review the standard and then take that in light with what you have going on at your school district to make sure that you have a process to identify these types of leases, capture those when they are identified, and then we're going to have to vet them through these criteria that the new leasing standard is going to be providing to us, which may be more disclosures and more accounting in the financial statements. With your school district, you know, you have several different leases that happen every year. You know, typically technology-based from what I've seen over the years, but that's not to say that can't change with, you know, different types of things as well. So to be aware of it, you know, we work very closely with the administration when these new standards come out, saying, okay, this is what you guys got to be thinking about. This is the kind of information we want to be capturing. This is what we need to know about when we come out to do the financial statements. So the lease standard is not effective until 2021. The one that's changing for this fiscal year 20, is a fiduciary standard, and it speaks to how, specifically for K-12, it's not implemented for K-12, but our interpretation as to it relates to your district is the student activity funds.
Right.
And where do those get reported in your financial
yep.
statements? So we've done a lot of research on this, and we're currently vetting out things with the Illinois State Board of Education. But we do believe that under this new standard, student activity accounts will not be reported in fiduciary funds. They will be reported as activity within your general fund, as a separate revenue line item, as a separate expenditure line item. Those assets will be carried over into your balance sheet. What we're trying to do with the State Board right now, because we are aware that their AFR form does actually perform a series of calculations and benchmarks, that we can give them some guidance to make some adjustments to that so that it doesn't impact your financial profile score and it doesn't also impact your cost per pupil.
Okay.
So we're on that case.
All right.
We've been doing a lot of work around that. So, you know, the good thing, I think, is you know, you're aware of this. So when the financial statements come out again, you go, oh, what is this line up? You're an elementary district. There's not a lot of activity in there. When you go to a high school district,
yeah.
Oh, my God, we could see $1 million running through a building on clubs.
Yeah.
You know, that can change things significantly.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, just for people to just have a misunderstanding, look at how much assets we have in this fund. You know, your bargaining, it's not our money, that's kind of your money. So it's just something to be aware of. We included this comment for all of our school districts. It's not as impactful to 140.
Okay. All right. And then on page 5, you have a series of questions that... that you're very interested in our views regarding certain matters. And
sure.
That you have a few bullet points, A through F, and then A to B. But I guess my bigger question from that is, what kinds of feedback would you typically get from boards on those kinds of things?
Typically, so as part of the audit process, we're required to have an open line of communication with a member of governance. Mm-hmm. So on an annual basis, we'll have a phone call with a member of the board, asking them, do you have any concerns about the auditor? Do you have any questions about the audit process? We want to keep that as an open dialogue.
Okay.
If the governing body is aware of something that, we should be aware of that could impact the financial statements, that may not be intuitive. We want to know about that. Hey, there's something that's going on that we did differently this year that we just want to bring to your attention. We know you don't have a responsibility over identifying accounting transactions, but big picture type stuff, stuff that's going on. I have one client that's in the process of potentially getting the school building donated to them, build brand new for them. That's something to just keep on the back of my radar, because if that happens, we've got...
Nick, you're holding out on us.
These are just the types of things that can come out sometimes. You never really know what happens when you have that dialogue. So this is boilerplate.
Okay.
That's required. But at any point in time, I work for the board, mm-hmm. So you can pick up the call, pick up the phone and call me or send me an email, and I can, respond.
Awesome. Well, I had one more sort of mixed question.
Yeah. That was two for the record.
Oh, is it two?
It was two.
I counted three, but who's counting?
I got them. So, but back to the CAFR, the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report.
Sure.
I had asked you some things to celebrate, and you've given us a couple, but I did want to point out a couple of other things that I found that maybe you can correct me if they're not things I should celebrate, but I wanted to just point out that our interest income received in the fiscal year of 2019 increased by 85.6% from our previous year. And I really think that Eric has done a lot of work to make sure that we could maximize the dollars that we were holding on to for the referendum, and that has exceeded our expectation, and that has improved our financial position. And it's like free money. I mean, it's money that we wouldn't otherwise have that nobody but the banks had give us. So that's kind of... get money from the bank.
Huh? Let it roll, Eric. Let it roll.
So I just thought that was something that I thought was really great, wanted to point out.
Sure.
I also have two more. In the 10 years, these last 10 years, there's a lot of data. Demographics, but it tells us that in 2010 we had 8% of our students receiving free or reduced lunches. And this year we know that it's been pretty steady over the last 4 years. It's 23%.
Yeah, think about that.
So when we talk about the tax burden that we're all feeling that has grown over time, we're responding to some of these changes in our demographics. And not just that, but also the change in what our kids are experiencing and the higher levels of anxiety. And just we're just doing a better job knowing that we can handle some of these things a little bit better. But also to celebrate is that you've done a good job of laying out our staffing levels. And if we look at the total staffing level from the school year 2009-2010, there were 429.3 staff members, 429.3. And this year, 10 years later, there's 426.74. So we're lower than we were in the 2009-2010 school year. Now, we've seen a shift where we have fewer aides but more certified staff. So we've replaced aides with higher qualified people in those rooms dealing with again, those changing demographics and those changing needs. So I want our community to know that we've been really good stewards in the sense that there have been pretty tight controls on our staffing levels that you can see from a decade's difference. And in that time, you know, I think as a community, you can worry about, are my tax dollars being put to good use? Is there extra administration, yada, yada, whatever that is? But we had 23 administrators in 2009, and this year we have 22, and that's been fairly steady over that time period. And so it's not administrative overhead that we're seeing here. We're putting those resources with the students where they need to be. And so I just thought that was a really another important thing to have perspective on from that long-term view, so that we can feel good about what our tax dollars are doing.
Yeah, I'm just on your 23%. I look at, you know, the dog days of 2009, 2010, and on page 110, the unemployment rate was 8.5% in the Glen Ellyn area, and as of 2018, it's 3.1%, which is, you know, hopefully that free and reduced lunch will be reduced by lower unemployment, higher wages. I mean, 2009-10 were just terrible, terrible years, devastating to so many people. So.
Yeah, it's good to point that out. Okay. Spend some time looking at those back statistical tables. There's lots of interesting information. I appreciate Jess highlighting a number of them. I had made very similar observations and additional ones that we'll perhaps talk about at another time. All right. We good? Nick?
We're good.
All right, my friend.
Thank you for coming.
Good work. We appreciate it. Okay. Our second presentation is the district early learning program update, and Katie will facilitate this conversation.
And this evening, I do have some of our preschool teachers and co-teachers here with me, as well as Janine Waltman and Carol Montgomery Bate from Case to help present the information tonight.
And folks, you do have a pamphlet that was underneath your laptops of material.
So as you know, preschool is a very instrumental part of children's education from birth to age 5. And I'm going to share the presentation tonight with Carol and Janine. We're going to share some information about the birth to 3 side of our programming, and then we'll focus on our Preschool for All program. As you know, the research is strong around children being part of a preschool program and the benefits that that has. And then here's some additional research around what they found about adults who have entered into and experienced preschool programs, that, you know, they have higher earnings, they're more likely to hold jobs, they commit fewer crimes, and we're more likely to have graduated from high school. Also, the early childhood program develops the whole child, and you'll hear us talking about that from birth all the way through our preschool programs here within District 41. So they're going to, Janine and Carol are going to talk a little bit about our birth to 3 program that we share now with Kate.
Okay, so this first slide really talks to just more numbers and visuals of why birth to 3 is so important. And actually, I was thinking when you're talking about that raise in number of free and reduced lunch to 23%, that really speaks to this too. This first part of the slide looks at children experiencing poverty. The second part is non-poverty. And this is actually a study done by parents as teachers, which is an evidence-based home visiting model for birth to 3 and curriculum, which our program has used for years. Those first couple bars you can see are kiddos that had no experience before kindergarten. That second one is maybe home visiting, but nothing else. But I think the most impactful ones are those green rows, those ones where the children received really high intensive birth to three support and preschool. And when you just look at how far ahead that boosts kids, it really speaks to the benefit of focusing early, you know, rather than trying to catch kids up later, of, you know, building them up when their brains are so active and developing.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little bit of history about the Baby and Me program. We actually first got the grant through District 41 in 2000 to have a birth to three program. And up until July 2018, the district was able to sustain that grant and even grow it. So I think that speaks to really just that recognition of how important it is here in Glen Ellyn. In July of 2018, ISBE put up the grant for recompetition and really upped the minimum programming that they expected programs to provide. And we were a little nervous as District 41, just wanting to be sure we ensured continuing that program, but we weren't sure we would be able to qualify at the size that they were asking. We really lucked out that in that time, CASE and the Glenbard Early Childhood Collaborative, which 41 is a part of, was looking at providing the program across Glenbard districts. And after much consideration and deliberation, we decided to go with CASE and the Glenbard Collab and really take that leap of faith that maybe that could in the end benefit us better. Just to see those initial results of what's happened so far, in June of 2018, we were serving 8 families in District 41. Currently, as of our last numbers, we're up to 25. In addition, you kind of see that big dip that kind of at first is a little alarming. What happened? That was all the kiddos that went to preschool. A big part of what we really try and do is to provide that seamless transition and work with this amazing staff here in ensuring kids are going straight from the birth to three program into the preschool. And so now we're actually starting to build up everybody's caseloads again to make sure that we can serve more families.
So when someone is in the program, what does that mean? What is having a home visitor and having a home visit? What that means is that someone, the same person who is trained and qualified in the curriculum, the parents as teachers curriculum, visits that family every other week, more if needed, for a full, could be up to 3, maybe even longer than that if the service starts during pregnancy. And in the visit, there are always 3 parts to it. It's planned in advance and it's very tailored for that family. The 3 parts are that there's always some sort of parent-child interaction. So there's an activity that is provided, or the parent, or the parents, or the grandma, whoever is there that day, to do with the child. Not for the home visitor to do with the child, but for the, it's a really special, beautiful time for the parents to have together. And so that activity is tailored for the age of the baby, the interests of the parent. And then the home visitor will notice and highlight things that parent is doing well. Because our whole goal is to increase confidence and increase the sense of competence. The second part is developmental centered parenting. Again, very tailored to exactly the age of the baby and what the parent is interested in. And then the third part is general family well-being. That's the part where maybe we are there because of the baby, but maybe the family is actually concerned about the second grader, or the family's concerned about dad who lost his job, or the family's concerned about mom who has seemed not herself after the birth of this baby. Like, whatever it is, that family well-being part gives us the license to go ahead and support the family in that area. In addition to the home visits, we also have groups. And our groups are open to everybody in the district. The full home visiting program has some qualifications. Families have to be experiencing some sort of stressors or some combination. of stressors, but our groups are open to every single family in District 41 who has children, kindergarten and younger. And so we put a few pictures in. The picture on the left are some Lenbard Parent Series programs that are focused on early childhood. And so we have four of those every year. The second picture highlights our summer programming. So we are a year-round program, so there's fun in the summer, too, and home visits in the summer. And then the third picture is just like what a weekly group looks like. As you can see, again, activities are provided for parents to be engaged with their children. And then last, we want to share with you the happy news that really got started when we were in our last year, where we were a purely District 41 program. We were required to go through an audit process through the National Parents as Teachers program, which is a very extensive process. And you can see the one on the left says Baby and Me, Glen Ellen District 41, received the blue ribbon. We actually were rated as 97 out of 100 of the quality standards, which we believe, based on how they ranked all the programs who received that award, was the highest in Illinois that year with our program. Then, so you get it for 1 year, and then the next year you have to sort of go through another mini audit process to see whether you're going to get the full blue ribbon for 4 more years. And so the second year of that mini audit was our first year being with CASE, and the year that we really had to ramp up, going from just the two of us to now we're a team of 10. We are at least 10 times bigger than we were, so we were a little nervous, would this actually happen? And it did. So that's where you see the second one says Lenbard Parents as Teachers. That's our new name. That's the one that, you know, District 41 is still a part of, and we're serving three times as many children, District 41 children, as a result. And, of course, the segue into the general preschool program is just what Janine said, that our whole goal is to have that seamless transition and have families first connect with us and then do that warm handoff to the preschool program.
So as you know, we have the Preschool for All program throughout the district. This year we have 10 sections of all blended pre-K, 5 sections in the morning and 5 sections in the afternoon. We have 2 co-teachers that provide services based on our students' needs, so some of those services may be provided within the classroom and others may be provided outside of the classroom based on the students' needs. We have 2 instructional aides per classroom and up to 18 students who are either 3, 4, or 5 years old. The class makeup is 8 students who are considered at risk, 6 IEP students, and 4 tuition students per classroom. And the blended classroom, the program blends all of our students together into one, you know, blended section. So again, it's your at-risk students, or our IEP students, and then our typically developing tuition-paying students. We also have 2 sections of bilingual pre-K, one section in the morning and one in the afternoon. That class also has a class size of up to 18 students, and the makeup of that classroom is 14 at-risk students and 4 IEP students. Our capacity this year is much larger than years in the past. We have 12 total sections, again, 10 of those being our blended and 2 being our bilingual section. We have 176 spots for our Preschool for All, which consists of our IEP and our at-risk students, and 40 tuition spots, which gives us a total of 216 total students in our preschool program. Our curriculum and assessment, we use Creative Curriculum Gold for our curriculum and Teaching Strategies Gold for our assessments. We're mandated through ECHRS and the Preschool for All program to select research-based curriculum and assessments. So these are the ones that we have here in our district. And then our instruction is aligned to the Illinois Learning Standards, as well as you'll hear us refer to ECHRS 3 And that's really the compliance piece of our preschool program. So that stands for Early Childhood Environment Rating Scale. Here you can see over the last few years how our students have performed as they're going into kindergarten. So these are our kindergarten-bound students. You can see in 2018-19 we had 87 students that were kindergarten-bound, which was, I think, the highest that we've had in the last few years for kindergarten-bound students all at once. And we assess students in the areas that you can see to your left. So knowledge of letters and sounds, writing their names, writing to convey meaning, counting, quantifying, connects numbers and quantities, and then creates and extends patterns. So it's really broken down into our literacy and our math. As you can see, our students do exceptionally well across the board in all of these areas. In the future, this is going to look a little bit different because in ECKERS requires that we build upon 20 core priorities that we select as a district. And so you'll see, I'm not going to read through all of these, but you can see the core priorities that have been identified as a district. So moving forward, you'll see us reporting out on these instead of the ones that you saw on the previous slide. Pre-K training, as you know, we have moved to in all blended sections within our district. And so we have worked together as a team, the teachers and I, along with Michelle Shea Baker, in developing the training that they would like to see to help support that work. So here's a list of the training that has been provided in this school year. It's really focused on classroom behaviors, on the ECKERS training itself to ensure that we're compliant now that we have our Preschool for All grant. Also, meaningful writing experiences, how to build writing into the preschool day, trauma-sensitive training, and then also training for our new teachers on our curriculum and assessment work. Family engagement, we are lucky enough to have Myra Rojas as our parent teacher educator who assists us with all of the registration of our students, helps bring parents into the school setting as well as the district office to help them feel comfortable as newcomers to our district, and then also assists us in providing our family engagement opportunities across the district. And so you can see here some of the engagement activities that we have provided this year. And right now, if you look at Denise, my administrative assistant's desk, you'll see it covered in snowman materials because that's going home over the winter break to assist families in some engagement at home in building snowmen and having conversations around, you know, counting and putting the snowmen together. So it's definitely a team effort. When we provide these engagement opportunities, but really fun for the families and for the students. And then still to come is our compliance audit for the year. We are working through the ECKERS 3 compliance to make sure that everything is ready. And as a program, we decided to take a leap of faith and work ahead of time on the ECKERS compliance with StarNet. And so we had some coordinators come out through the StarNet organization to take an early look at our program and how we were doing in the area of compliance, because this is the first time we have received the PFA grant in quite a number of years, I would say 10 years. And so we wanted to make sure that we are ready for the audit to come. And I can say that they were very impressed with the work that the team is doing, and it feels like we are doing a really good job. And so I'm eager for them to come out and showcase the work that our team has done. And with that, does anybody have any questions?
That's a good looking kid.
I've seen that kid. I've seen that kid before. He looks familiar.
It is a nice playground too.
I'm assuming the at home visits are also by the police support.
Yes, that's a good question.
Can you repeat the question? I'm sorry, Guillermo.
Is my microphone?
He was asking whether the at-home visits that there was are also bilingual support.
Yes, and on our team, we were very careful in our hiring. We have three Spanish speakers, fully bilingual, bicultural. We have one Urdu speaker who also speaks Hindi. And then we have a really fabulous interpreter who speaks Burmese. And we have another interpreter who speaks Arabic, and we are sort of always, you know, searching to find other interpreters as needed. So yes,
and we built in funding for that as well. So did you hear that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I just follow up on that point, and before we get additional questions, I just was curious, and it's great to hear that you have invested in a number of interpreters. How often, of the, you have 25 parents, right? How often is the interpreter required?
Oh, that is a good question. To give you an exact answer, I would have to go back and really look at the data specifically for District 41, but in the on the whole, it's at least of our whole
mm-hmm.
you know, 95
okay.
families,
sure.
I would say 60.
Wow.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So a bunch.
It's very
probably
high.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Thank you. Board members, questions?
A couple. So I know that we're piloting a social-emotional learning at the
pre-K as well.
Oh, it is pre-K as well. Okay. That was my question. If I figured, I wondered if the curriculum kind of tied into it, but we're using the same one.
For second step as well.
Okay. And I just want to check my understanding here. With the pre-K program, you have two co-teachers, two instructional aides per classroom, and up to 18 students. So that's roughly 4.5 students per adult, if I'm doing that correct. And then at all times in a pre-K setting?
No, because we only have two co-teachers. The co-teachers rotate through the classrooms to provide support. And again, those supports are in the classroom and outside of the classroom, depending on the student's needs. So at times, if students need some more discrete skill practice or additional support, they might be pulled out of the classroom for a time. And that's really that continuum of services that we build into the pre-K program. So depending on what their needs are, depends on how those services are provided. But the two instructional aides are in there, obviously, unless, you know, they need to take a break, but they you know, rotate that so that there's at least one in the classroom, mm-hmm. as well as the classroom teacher.
And then there's a potential that you had even additional adults mm-hmm. who might be providing services in
yes.
the room.
Yes. Yes.
So, okay. Yeah.
So there's six sections, but there's only two teachers.
10 sections.
Yeah.
There's 10 sections.
There's 10 sections of blended, two of bilingual.
Okay.
So that's where the 12 comes from.
Describe to me how the blended is working. Like, just give me a more of a detail on it. We've got, is it five classrooms essentially that we're using?
Five classrooms.
Okay.
So five sections.
Two teachers in each classroom, or?
So there's one classroom teacher and two instructional aides in every room.
Okay.
And then the co-teachers support those rooms based on the students' needs. So we have two co-teachers that support.
For those five
those
classrooms
yes.
at a time.
Yes.
Morning and afternoon.
Yes.
Okay, so. Let me get it. See if I got it right. It's in the morning, five classrooms, five teachers. Amongst those five classrooms are two more co-teachers that teach with all those other five
mm-hmm.
teachers, plus two aides per
classroom.
Per classroom.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I see. So we're essentially using a 5 classrooms for the blended programs, mm-hmm. and 1 for the, so a total of 6 classrooms.
Yes.
Okay. And 176 kids? 216, sorry.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Busy
day. It is. Teachers are very
busy. Are there any children that aren't able to participate or you've had to move out because their needs might be higher than what we can manage?
At this time, we're working with all of the parents and the students to create the continuum of services within our program, and so for some students we do offer an extended day for those students who need some additional support, and that's housed here in our buildings.
How did this move? Like, we used to do some of this at Ben Franklin, and some of it moved.
Preschool was always at Forest Glen.
Okay.
We didn't have any preschool sections at
others.
And Katie, it has to be blended to be a preschool for all.
For the preschool.
Correct. That's one of the criteria for the grant.
The preschool for all is our blended sections.
Yes. And that's part of the grant.
That's where the preschool for all funds.
Yes. So that's not an option. That's the model that's required for that grant.
Right.
You can have sections outside of that, but PFA is only
for blended.
The blended sections.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But our IEP students count within the blended sections. The only students that don't count towards funding are our tuition students.
Can I go back to the first, to 3? How often are you making repeat visits to homes, to parents in homes? I mean, you may have said it, and I just...
Week, right?
What, is that what it was?
Every other week?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So usually when we start with a family, we actually try and see them weekly through their first 8, what we call foundational visits. And then after that, we go bi-weekly, depending on the need of the family. If there's more interventions and just support that are needed, then we do it more frequently until that need is passed. And then we aim at least 2 visits a month, though.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you talked about always shooting for a really smooth transition. So I'm curious, what sort of things can occur that create blockage or make that transition bumpy or rough? Can you?
Well, actually in District 41, it's going pretty smoothly, especially because you have increased spots, so that has gone very smoothly. But the other thing, and we'd have to credit Katie for this, is that years ago, we sort of adopted a real coordination with the pre-K program. So we didn't think of it as 2 separate programs where the family had to reapply and it was going to be so iffy on whether they would get in. If they were with us, the idea was, okay, of course, you've already established that there are needs here, or else they wouldn't be able to be in this ISBE-funded program that has certain rules. And so let's use our paperwork and our developmental screening that was all aligned to what pre-K needed, and we could just slide it right over. And that, for families that maybe were struggling with some other bigger issues, like you've sort of been alluding to, hunger or general poverty or risk of homelessness, getting all your paperwork in can be a little daunting. So to have that assistance and have that smooth connection between our 2 programs, so even though now that we have moved over and become officially, you know, with CASE, a different organization, we still have that same understanding. And so I would say for District 41, it's working pretty well.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Good to hear. Thank you, Katie. Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Okay.
Before we go, I just give a shout out to the EC team. As some of you may know, I have a son of the EC program, and I just want to give a shout out to the team and the work that they do, and just thanks for everything that they do.
Thank you. Always good to have that shout out. Thank you so much. Thank you for being here. Okay. We will move on then to a discussion item, the 2020-2021 school year calendar. Melissa?
Right. As you're aware, we had a couple of calendar committee meetings. And agreed on a start date for this coming school year of August 19th. We've had some questions about, is that really early? It really falls right back into the pattern of what District 41 used to be doing outside of the summers that we had to push back because of construction. So the committee had conversation about having that early release SIP day on Halloween and decided that it really was in the best interest of kids to do this because we're only interrupting one school day by doing that. We're interrupting the day on Halloween versus if we would have had to, if we would have had that SIP day on a different day, we'd be impacting instruction on 2 days because we know that it's always impacted on Halloween regardless. Those were really the highlights of the calendar. A lot of it is just logistical of rolling in, you know, our required number of days of students' attendance and staff attendance. So I'm going to defer. Bruce, anything else stand out from calendar? It was actually a pretty simple process this year.
Yeah. Halloween should be a national holiday.
Well, and we don't.
As a teacher, that's my opinion.
And you know, even when it falls on a weekend,
an informed opinion. Yeah,
even when it falls on a weekend, the actual day, it still seems that it impacts school.
It limits. I mean, it's a great day. It's a great day for children. I thought about the half day, and I think it. A lot of things happen when you have a full day of kids on Halloween. A lot of stuff happens, but not all. A lot of it's good, but not all of it is educational.
Really?
Yes. I'm
is
just
that
saying.
True?
So,
okay.
I would agree with that. And we've had minimal questions about the calendar come up.
I think it looks good.
Good.
Yeah. Well. And I'm sorry I didn't ask this one in advance, but do we have Columbus Day off because that's timing wise it's a good day for us to have that day off, or do we have it off because it's a celebration? Because I know we haven't celebrated in the last couple of years. And
we have typically taken that holiday, and the only reason we did the last 2 years was for our construction meeting. Yeah. So we've been, as you know, also have the next day off, which is an institute, which usually aligns to all of Lombard's using that as an institute day to allow for some collaboration, if possible.
And we also
I don't know if that answered your question, but that's just been a mystery.
I think I'm implying whether, I guess I'm implying a question of whether or not we need to celebrate Columbus Day.
Or do we have a choice over whether we can call it Columbus Day or Indigenous Peoples Day? I know different states do. I don't know if that's a statewide thing or if that's a by-school district thing.
Thank you.
Is that what you're asking? Because that's what I'm hearing, but I don't know if you're afraid to say it. I'm happy to say it. Or do we have power over what we call it and how we can honor it?
We can certainly find out. That, to be honest, that's a new question for me. I think as a district, you could name the day whatever you want. The legal
holiday. We named it Institute Day last year, so I think.
Yeah. You know, so if we want to change the name, I think we have. You know. It would be a legal holiday, but you know, we can call it whatever we want internally and mark it on our.
I mean, I know different places call it different things, and so I don't know if they've had to legally change the name of it or they've just chosen to honor the Indigenous people instead of the colonizer.
Yeah, I believe that would be at the discretion of the board. We wouldn't be changing it for anything other than District 41, but you know, if that's of interest, then
yes,
I would be in support of that if my thought the board member.
I would second that in terms of the DEI focus. If we, you know, we've talked about that several times.
I would also be supportive of it. I don't know what the right procedure would be. Would want to make sure we do it in ways that we should do it. But
right.
I like the intention, and I think it's the proper focus on the historical record. So it would be the appropriate thing.
I'd rather have a board discussion about it, future board items. Just
we would need to look
at think about it. Think about, you know, how we would want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
See what members of the community think. Get some feedback on that. So,
I think there's interest in taking a look.
But I think we should take the day off on the calendar.
Yeah, we're getting rid of the day. I think the day is staying on the calendar. It's a day off. Okay.
Just a reference in my, well, in a district that I know of, we take Good Friday off, and then that Monday afterwards off, and we just call it day off. We don't call it Good Friday. So
day off.
But anyway,
very descriptive. Day off. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you. Appreciate bringing the thoughts to the board, and we will address it at a future board meeting. Okay. Well, thank you very much. We will now turn to our action items. Are there any items board members would like to be removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes employment recommendations and resignations noted on the personnel report, the school district payment order, and FOIA reports for the time period of November 19th through December 2nd, 2019, and the board meeting regular and closed session minutes of November 25th, 2019. I need a motion.
Motion.
Need a second?
Yes.
Thank you, Bruce. Roll call, Ms. Moak.
Mr. Lowak?
Yes.
Mr. Curry?
Yes.
Mrs. Butterer?
Yes.
Mr. Esty?
Yes.
Mrs. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Guzman?
Yes.
Dr. Bruno?
Yes. Thank you. We'll now move on to superintendent recommendations, and the first item is to accept the fiscal year 2019 audit. May I have a motion to accept the 2018-2019 fiscal year audit as presented?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Any discussion? Very good. Ms. Moak, roll call.
Mrs. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Guzman?
Yes.
Mr. Lobach?
Yes.
Mr. Curry?
Yes.
Mrs. Butterman?
Yes.
Mr. Esty?
Yes.
Dr. Bruno?
Yes. Second item is the strategic plan consultant. May I have a motion to approve engagement with Consortium for Educational Change and Dr. Mark Van Clay to develop a new strategic plan at a cost of $15,000 as presented?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion, please.
I think Guillermo asked some really good questions today, so I just wanted to share the questions in case anybody hadn't had a chance to look at that. He asked me to list maybe the top three benefits of contracting with CEC. I actually had four. Sorry. One of the benefits that I wanted to point out is that Dr. Van Clay has already worked extensively with the board, so he knows the board. The board knows him. You know his vocabulary. He knows the vocabulary that we've been using here. He knows a lot of the district data, so the process will be able to be much more efficient. There won't be as much onboarding of somebody new if we were to go a different route. The other strength that I listed is if we hit a bump or a snag or a question in our process, by contracting with CEC, we have the entire organization and all of their experts on board, whereas contracting with somebody who didn't have that breadth or scope of an organization behind them, we obviously wouldn't get that. Their timeline, I believe, strength or reason number three was, I'm not sure if it was this, but correct me if I'm wrong, Guillermo. Their timeline will allow us to finish the process at the end of the year so that we're ready for next year. But their process is not a boilerplate process, so you won't find that we end up with a strategic plan that you could just copy and paste another district's name from. So it's an authentic process that we have significant input and ownership on. They don't just deliver a written plan to us. We actually develop it through the process and do a lot of the writing and crafting on our own. So it really is a plan that should end up with a high level of ownership. And I'm forgetting number four, but I felt strongly about number four. I might have rolled them all into one.
It was pretty clear from last meeting that obviously he can take us to different levels. Just based on the simple exercise that we did, how we all, he was able to consolidate at the higher level and the lower level where those things fall within the bucket. So he's going to get you into this to the history behind going with them. But thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
No, I want to thank Jason for asking for some alternates for us to look at. I think it was kind of clear from what we got that this was the best $15,000 seems like a lot of it's a significant investment. But I, you know, even hearing from our auditor tonight about the thing he wanted to celebrate from our annual report is that we have a plan and we're working the plan, and
correct,
that you need to have a good plan. And so I think that that's a worthwhile investment to make sure that we're coming up with something good that's for the next 5X.
Yeah, and I think just to follow up on that, I think,
please,
you know, in getting those other proposals, I think it, what struck me as being different from CEC from the others was CEC was more of a working plan, working with the board, working to figure out the board's goals, you know, their stressors, all these, working with them to identify, you know, pros, cons, and to really work the plan based on the desires, as opposed to more of a fill the blank kind of thing, which is really what more the other ones seemed. And I think, given the work that we're trying to do, it makes sense to do work to put that plan together. So.
And I do like that the process ends with identifying the data for the board to monitor.
Yeah.
I think
that's
been
nice
clearly communicated
piece
by the board that they want to know at the end of this plan what their monitoring task will be. I was very excited to hear that former State Superintendent Tony Smith is now working in that capacity. I was disappointed when I reached out that they're so booked up that they couldn't even, didn't have any time to work with us. I would anticipate their process is really a good one, but he said, you know, I wish we could, but they're just, you know, been inundated with requests.
I mean, on that data end, I really thought that, you know, the hard work that the former boards, I think, put in, you know, before our board was important. I think that there is still a lot of good,
absolutely,
high-level data in those reports, and would like to look at that. I thought a lot of the stuff was fluff. I mean, you know, there were too many categories, but I know that, you know, I remember listening to those meetings, and I think it was staff that agreed to that and set those standards out. So I don't want to just throw that away, you know, baby with bathwater, but analyze what seems like the most important and the most reasonable.
Yeah.
I think $15,000 is kind of a lot of money. I mean, that's an aid. So I, you know, I'm leery of that. It seems like a lot of money to me. Anyway, that's where I stand.
Okay, good. Others, any thoughts on this? I just to underscore again the fact that Dr. Van Clay addressed quite textually the idea of the appropriate data that we would be addressing to help us monitor says to me he was listening, right? He was attentive. He was listening. And that gives me greater assurance that the dollars are going to be an investment and create a return on investment in the classroom, in that he was attentive to that. And that means a lot, that he was listening.
I will also say when in his RFP or whatever they call it, he had kind of a schedule of things that we would do. And when we're talking about the money, there were several full-day sessions, several half-day
sessions. Right.
And so it's not just a one-evening thing that we're paying $15,000 for.
Oh, no.
It's
no.
All, right, but just, you know, just to be clear for anybody watching or listening, it's a very involved process, and there's a lot more than just the couple hours you might see at this table. And it will last us for 4 years or however long we are going to make it for. So it'll, I don't know, I'm not an accountant, you know, spread out the money over 4 years or whatever.
Got it.
And I think that's important to think about, too.
I agree, Julie, because when you looked at all of those things plotted out, there's meetings that will take place during the day. When I asked him the thought process, he said, because people just are not fresh at night, you know, and so if this is the most important, or one of the most, sorry, Eric, I'm not going to say the budget's not important, but, you know, if this is one of the most important documents that produce, that drives all of your work, they want to get people when we're fresh and engaged that way. So, you know, but like any consultant that we would choose to work with, if it's not rising to our expectations, we need to give them that feedback ongoing. So we will be doing that.
And I want to be clear, because I don't think we've mentioned it yet, that it this plan is to take more than the board's words. It's several different audiences of stakeholders.
Yes.
Thank you. Very good. All right, Ms. Moak, roll call, please.
Mr. Esty?
Yes.
Ms. Itzel?
Yes.
Mr. Guzma?
Yes.
Mr. Wobba?
Yes.
Mr. Curry?
No.
Mrs. Butterman?
Yes.
Dr. Bruno?
Yes. Thank you very much. And the final item is to approve the 2019 tax levy. May I have a motion to adopt the resolution approving 2019 tax levy with a certificate of tax levy providing for a total levy of $47,619,964. Need a motion?
Motion.
Need a second?
Second.
And discussion? Bruce, you'd like to start?
Yeah, I mean, I asked for projections, and because this is, you know, a pretty important thing. We're asking a lot of the community. Can I ask what, in the projection where we show a classroom being, an early childhood center being built, and then $1.5 million being used to staff it, was that an estimate for a 6 classroom or 10 classroom?
In that
early
projection, we modeled out a $17 million spend. So back when we had first started talking about this possibility of constructing the building, Jack Hayes had given me a $16 million number. That's 2 years old now.
Okay.
So I talked to him and he said, 17 would just be a better ballpark number. Again, this is not exact science. This is an estimate based on, the work that they did back then. So that $17 million is spread out over the first 2 years in that projection, and then starting in year 3 is when I added in the operational cost of 1.5.
And do we know what that would account or encompass? Is that a principal, assistant principal?
Yeah, there was a worksheet that we'd gone over. I don't have it in front of me right now. I have a loader computer tonight, but it involved an administrator, some nursing services, additional purchase services relative to an increased student population, custodial services. So 1.5 was reflective of adding 4 new classrooms. So you have certified staff, you have additional aides. We did a pretty extensive kind of breakdown of how that all plays out to get that estimate.
Can you send that to me,
Yeah, absolutely. It's been shared
before.
I'd be happy to share it again,
You can share it with...
So we would transfer the 6 class... We would transfer the folks from
the 6 classroom model right now over into a 10 classroom building. So the 1.5 estimate is to fully staff a 10 classroom model. So it'd be an additional 4 classrooms being staffed.
Do we need, or should we have a discussion about whether we need that extra capacity for the 4 extra classrooms if we were to build a 10 classroom? Or if a 6 classroom is about right?
Well,
I think comment on it. Go ahead, Eric.
I'm going to just ask the question because I'm a little confused. What does that have to do with tonight's levy?
Well, that's my question. It has a lot to do with it because, I mean, if we build a 10 classroom building, it's a lot. I mean, I think it's about $3 or $4 million less expensive, and the staffing I think came in around $600,000 instead of $1.5 million. So I mean, we go from it changed the whole position. Also, what meaning the 5-year outlook. So we're looking at, from what I could tell, we're still at a in the 5th year with the projections here, we're at a $725,000 surplus per year after we get done. And these are estimates, but after we get done building the school and putting 10 classrooms in. I remember hearing, I was wondering also what inflation rate we used for this worksheet here.
CPI is estimated at
1.5.
Yeah.
So that's what was used. Okay. If it were to go to 2 or 3, what happens to revenue surpluses and what let's say it went to 3.
I don't think it's gone to 3 in the last 10 years.
I think it's intuitive that the higher CPI generates more revenue, but it also increases our expenses because our contract pay to our teachers is tied to CPI.
Okay.
There's a myriad of things that I would think that would be impacted by a CPI of 3%, but I think if I can summarize what you're asking, I don't know that that's related to the levy decisions. I think this is a board discussion that needs to happen about the appropriateness of any type of building or program addition to the district, but that's why we hadn't done projections. You know, so you requested for a projection this morning, then I got it. You know, these are projections I had done and shared with the FAC. They were done and they're ready to go. Projection work I've done the last couple of years was the ask of a different board, I think, that looked at the impact of the levy differently. I've not gotten a single question related to the way that the levy conversations the last 2 years have been. So that was the first time I got it, and I guess I would ask the question, if that's an ask of the board and we want to look at those things, we should talk about that. That's why they're not here tonight.
Sure.
Because I have not had that request.
And Eric, Bruce, do you want to finish your thought before I move, give other board members a chance?
I use this as a basis for determining, you know, that we were going to, I mean, when we zeroed the levy 2 years ago and took a 0.25% or a quarter of what we took
last year,
you know, I heard doom and gloom. I heard that we were going to be in deficit spending and that you know, we couldn't, you know, we you know, two of my friends probably lost an election over that. And then I see we're building a larger, you know, planning on building a larger 10-classroom thing and spending twice as much as what the previous board had sort of thought about building. And we're in a position to have a $725,000 surplus. So when I look at what we are levying and I look at the projections of what our budget looks like, I think that I'm doing my fiduciary responsibility as a board member to see if we are levying as to what we're going to be spending. I mean, I was surprised not to have these because last year these helped me quite a bit in determining whether this was the proper move to make 2 years ago and last year, saving the taxpayers' dollars, you know, plus making sure that the kids were that the students were well funded and we were running a good school system. That's why I asked for it.
Can you wrap up your comments so I can move on?
He's okay.
I just want to be able to get other people a chance to get a voice in here.
So I was wondering also what estimate we used for determining what we're thinking about giving the teachers for a bump in pay, or what those estimates were. Were they the same as they were last year?
It's right now, this projection uses the formula that's active in our contracts right now.
About 3%, or
it's the 0.8 CPI plus 1.5. So salary increases are directly tied to CPI. So that's why it's reflected in both the revenue and the expense side of the projections at the same CPI increment, or CPI variable.
Okay. And then, if we zeroed the levy again this year, about how much do you think we would lose in revenue?
It's on another worksheet that's in part of the board packet, but the CPI increment is what you're talking about. For the 2019 levy, it's 1.9%, and that's approximately $875,000 that generates.
Okay. So at the end of those 5 years, it would be negative. Okay. So it's $875,000 a year. And then, you know, if we don't build the early childhood center, this would go to, I mean, we would be at 74%. We'd have $43 million in our bank. I think, you know, and I mean, we hired, I think some of these projections have in that we hired the 6 or 7 new personnel last year. And we're building a $17 million school, and we're funding that with $1.5 million. And we have approximately a surplus of $1 million a year, $750,000. So, and I think we're looking pretty good. You know, I think the former board did a good job of really looking into what we needed and seeing, you know, and making sure that we were in line with making those projections and making sure we weren't going into deficit spending.
Thank you, Bruce.
Yeah.
Please.
So, circle of agreement. We're all here on the board because we take our fiduciary responsibility very seriously. I want to make sure that words aren't being put into others' mouths about doom and gloom. And so I just want to speak to that because I think it was a reference to myself and maybe others on the board. In that, we know that our taxing revenue is limited to CPI. We also know that a huge bulk of our budget is tied to salaries and benefits. Salaries go up with CPI every year, no matter what, and benefits have, for many years, gone up significantly more than CPI. So when I talk about fiduciary responsibility, I talk about making sure that we can pay for the staff long-term and that we can continue to provide the level of service we have. When we talk about need, I don't limit my focus to the need for 1 year. We have to be thinking long-term. And we know that we are one of the last communities in our area to provide full-day kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. It's a conversation that our boards have been talking about for years and years, and there hasn't been a plan. There's been progress towards that. But we're in a position where we can try to start making that plan, and the first step in that plan is to look at, because of the two levy decisions that were made the last 2 years that limited our revenue and took what was possible and made it much more difficult to provide something that would be a full day kindergarten solution. Now we're limiting our scope. We're forced to limit our scope to an early childhood center that's focused on pre-K and trying to meet what we know are growing needs. We're not going to need fewer classrooms. We're going to need more. The need has been demonstrated. We have a best-in-class pre-K that we provide to District 41 that we could be providing to more students.
Yes.
And the earlier we get those students in pre-K and in our district, the better they are going to do in life. That's our job as a board.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to make sure that we're being clear that it wasn't doom and gloom, that it was trying to plan at long term for what we see as needs. Not everybody may agree on what the needs are, and that's okay. We can have those conversations. But I think we want to assume positive intent here. That's one of our norms. So to me, we have not decided what the early childhood center looks like. What this projection shows me is that there's something there that's possible, and we have to figure out what it is. I think there's also a number of things that we can celebrate that were unknowns when those other levy decisions were made and when they were more alarming. You're right. They were very alarming to some of us, myself included. And you're right. We're still doing okay. Why are we doing okay? Well, we got some more grant dollars that we weren't expecting. And we've done extremely well the last 2 years on interest income. Mm-hmm. Just like from nothing to, over $1 million So that's really helped more than we anticipated. We've also been continue to be extremely good stewards of our dollars and come in under budget on projects, and have had dollars added to our fund balance that weren't anticipated, but that we should celebrate. That's a good thing. So I want to be really mindful that when we talk about the decisions that we make that are long-term and we talk about costs to taxpayers, that we don't make short-term decisions that in the long run end up costing our taxpayers more dollars. It's way more money for our taxpayers to pay on debt than it is if we can hold those dollars in our savings, earn excellent interest, and be able to pay for expected expenses for capital projects. Our taxpayers are not going to be happy if we come to ask for them to pay for debt that we could have anticipated because we made short-term plans. So to me, that's the fiduciary responsibility that I have, and the responsibility that we have a shared commitment to.
Thank you, Jess. Additional board members? Guillermo?
No, I had a meeting with Eric last week, so I had my finance 99, it's not even 100, 101. But based on not that conversation, I think I understand what the objective is and what we're going to do now. Obviously, Jess now took another explanation, taking out of the numbers, so I look at the numbers, look at what we don't get forward, how we use the money, and how this will tie up to the decision, and I'm in agreement with it. So based on what I know so far, what I studied on the numbers, and your point that you just made, we'll see why we will go forward.
Thank you very much. Ted, how about yourself?
Well, for me, you can look at a projection, but it has it doesn't take into account all the uncertainties that might happen. Like we've been to Zen meetings, for example, where there's proposed legislation that have to do with reserves, do with tax freezes, those sorts of things. Those are unknowns. And also an unknown is just our enrollment. I note that we're up almost 100 students this year over last. Mm-hmm. And then another one that's going to be extremely variable, as I understand it, is when we have students with particular needs, we have to meet those needs. Mm-hmm. It's not just an average student that comes in. Additionally, if you take a look at our current long-range plan, we haven't met all our goals. In order to meet those goals, it's going to take money and resources.
Mm-hmm.
So, with the uncertainty and not being able to predict the future, I think full support of taking the full levy increase.
Thank you, Ted. Julie, how about yourself?
I would also support the full levy. I think if we are talking about being financially, fiscally responsible, to me in my own life, that means I save up for that new thing that I want or need. I only buy a house that I can afford. I save up for a new car, or frankly, I buy a used one. But it doesn't mean not taking that revenue to take on more debt later. We need the revenue so that we can provide the education and the services to the children in our district that we serve. And so to me, if you're not going to take the revenue that is allowed, that doesn't sound financially responsible to me. Because a business would not say, no, we don't want to make more money because we're trying to be more responsible. That's like not logical to me. And we know that we have increasing needs, and I think early childhood is just the beginning of it. That's not even all of it. And we have given up money over the last 2 years, and that's, the operating cost of an early childhood center. And we have 2 years of that. And so if we want to grow, if we want to continue to be among the best, I think it's necessary and I think it's responsible.
and I'm sure I have a lot more things, but I think that pretty much covers it. So, yeah, I would vote yes.
Right. Melissa, you wanted to...
Right, and I just wanted to add construction, EC, not all that factored in. What I don't think we talk enough about is the impact and the burden of all of the unfunded mandates. And I know mm-hmm. Katie and I and Laurel and some others live in that every day, depending on as students' needs change and as new students move in, and even down to the mandates this year for threat assessment and threat assessment teams, that all comes with really significant price tags attached to it, and that's just something that we struggle, you know, I don't say struggle to meet those, but struggle to find a way of how do we live within our means and do all of the things that we're being required to do. They, you know, some of this doesn't give us a phase in of a year or two. It's by December 20th you will have, you know, so things that weren't anticipated in planning for this year came up and were expected to produce. So I think just more of the nitty-gritty on a daily basis, how things impact us that maybe we don't talk about enough and let our community know the big burden that that creates for us to keep up with all of those unfunded mandates.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think it's also important to note that the levy really creates a ceiling for what our taxing levels can be. They don't necessarily set what the dollar amounts are to be actually taken. We can, by setting a ceiling at a higher rate, we give the district the opportunity to tax at a level that satisfies the identified needs without giving us that leeway. It really limits the district in its ability to take on these kind of programs without losing other things. We have the ability to abate if the budget and spending shows that's proper. In fact, we have done that with it a few times over the last decade. So this gives such a ceiling for us, and we can work within that ceiling to the best way to protect taxpayer funds and to the benefit of all students.
Thank you. I agree.
Do you want to?
If you want, if it's,
up.
If it's
I don't
a
feel like I'll ask
that. Well, if you wanted to follow up on something specific,
yeah. Are we planning? Sorry, through this budgeting schedule, are we planning? Is that like a employment neutral? So we're not planning on hiring anybody over those 5 years. Is that one of the estimates?
In the projection, specific projection. Yeah, the projection is held constant.
Yeah.
So the employment is
the exception of adding the operational expenses
for the early childhood.
Everything else is held constant.
That's what I
okay.
So.
Yeah. And then I just wanted to respond. I wasn't criticizing you in particular. I mean, when we made the levy vote over the last 2 years, we had 30 or 40 people show up. I don't know how many. A lot. And I think that's where it's this constant balance of, you know, taxpayer burden on their homes. I mean, I've heard a lot of talk about people, and I don't have this house, but people in the 700 grand range to 1.5 million range, you know, really having a hard time selling their house, and they're paying, you know, 20 to 35 grand a year in taxes on their home. And that's, I hear this, I don't know if it's true, it's not scientific, but I hear that you know, it's the taxes that are causing people to question, you know, whether they want to buy that new house, because they know they're going to have those taxes forever and ever, and they're probably going to go up over time, etc. I'm a public school teacher, so I'm dependent on taxes too. But you're also talking to a guy who, you know, I work in a school district where the state just gave much more aid to people. And we benefited, and I've seen that in my classroom. I've seen the dollars come into my classroom. Whereas here, we got more state-mandated requirements, and every tax dollar that we're asking for isn't from, you know, the company down the street. It's from the homeowners. I mean, 93% of it comes from homeowners here in the district. And I'm not saying, you know, I'm not... And yet, we have very good schools. It's a balancing act. It's definitely, I view it as a balancing act. But every dollar we ask for from the public is also a dollar that, you know, that family doesn't have to spend. Now, I don't feel as bad for the $1.5 million guy, but, you know, I've seen my taxes here in 20-some-odd years quadruple. So, and that's not going with inflation. I don't know if I'm not, you know, contesting my assessment enough or whatever. They went up 7% last year. I just got emails from folks that, you know, like mine went up 11%, et cetera. Not sure why. I know that hits the, that's not you. That hits the grist mill of, you know, was it Milton Township?
The Milton Township
assessor's office, which is a mystery box wrapped in a conundrum as to how they figure out what each personal tax increase is going to be or not going to be. So, no, Jess, I was not arguing with you. I was just saying what we felt for, you know, hours of things, because people in this school district want good schools. On the other side of that, I hear, and I don't know if you guys hear this or not, my taxes are high. So every dollar we spend, I really think we need to watch it. And I'm not accusing the administration of spending frivolously or anything like that. I just think that you know, I mean, here's a little thing I saw at Hadley, and I'll bring it out in the open. I saw furniture there. It's beautiful furniture. You know, it's architecturally designed and everything else. In my world, it just seemed a little extreme. It seemed like we spent that money, and would a regular chair have done, or did we need the cube that was designed with the hole in the middle? I mean, I called it the makeup cube. I don't know if anybody's going to. I'm sure nobody's doing that. But that was, you know. So when we talk about watching the dollars, and that's one board member's personal opinion on that, you know. And we trust the administration to buy that. But I'm giving you feedback as to what I saw and what I felt. That doesn't mean it's, you know, it's not necessarily right or wrong, but it's something that, you know. My grandmother, who lived through the Depression, raised three kids through the Depression, would have gone, it's a little too extravagant. So, I'll leave it at that.
Jess, I wanted to give you another chance to respond, if you'd like, in that Bruce attempted to sort of correct and clarify. I'll give you a couple of minutes if you'd like.
Sure. I don't disagree that we all feel pressured by our taxes. I think where I disagree with, I guess what's outside of the circle of agreement here is that that reducing spending on the education is what's going to alleviate that. I don't think that that's the case, and I get that there are people who do think that, but you know, I've attended, what's that guy's name who did the tax talk? That of the video I shared last night. Ralph
Mathier.
Ralph Mathier. He gave an excellent hour-long presentation, and it's on Vimeo, Ralph Mathier, about taxes and taxes in Illinois and the levers that affect it, right? And it's so worth your while if you can watch it, especially if you're disgruntled about your taxes. Because it's a systemic issue. It's because of the system we have in the state of Illinois. Mm-hmm. Not all states have this system. There's good and bad to it, and so it's worth learning about. I think one of the biggest levers, I think the biggest lever is increasing property values. If we can increase property values, then it alleviates. It alleviates the rate. It lowers the rate of tax. It doesn't. We don't have to spend less to lower the rate because the property tax, the value of our properties is higher. That is the lever, and that's why we feel it. If you look in the CAFR in 2009, we had our residential assessed value, 1.3 billion. in 2018, it's recovered to $1.3 billion, but still a little bit less than where it was in 2009. And our commercial has not recovered. It was $121,000, and now it's $104 million. Thank you. So many commas. And $104 million is where it's at now in 2018. So, to me, that's the lever. I've talked with a lot of taxpayers. I've knocked a lot of doors. I'm out in the community. I go to these things. And people talk about how they value the schools, and they tie the schools to their property values. Not everyone, but that's the biggest message, and that's the message from Ralph.
Oh, yes.
That's the message from... I've just heard it in so many of our professional development circles. And so, I mean, even at the tax assessors workshops that we went to, you could see in some less affluent communities, the tax rates were astronomical because they don't have the value of the homes. And I couldn't even imagine paying those tax rates to live in those towns. When I feel so fortunate that we're here in Glen Ellyn. That we, it's a burden. I live in the average, and probably like you in the average home. So it's not what you're talking about.
I might
be
below average.
Wide average.
It's a $400,000 home. So, that's not everybody in Glen Ellyn, but that is the average in our district. So anyway, I think that's the point I wanted to make. I know in the past too. I think we have to think really strategically about what our levers are, and the more powerful lever we have to move the needle on that is to increase the property values, and our piece of control on that is to get the best possible value of education that we can. And it's going to start with our next long-range plan and aligning all the resources and showing that we're monitoring to our performance to that plan. So I think we need these dollars to do that.
Good. Good conversation. I would I'm linking to the point about the relationship between the schools and the property values. As I noted last year, and I think the year prior, but there is an extensive amount of academic research, very well validated, that strongly correlates these two, property values and schools, the quality of the schools. A couple of points I wanted to raise. I think a few of these may be in addition to what everyone else has said. You may have recently heard about an international student assessment that's given across 79 countries, including the United States. It's done here with a select sample of representative students. It's given, I think, every other year. It's the Program for International Student Assessment, and they measure students on reading, math, in a couple of different areas, and compare across nations. And interestingly, they identified how much better students who were in the top percent of the income groups were doing compared to students who were in the bottom 10%. In fact, it was so significantly different that the top 10% of the most socioeconomic advanced students were learning three grade levels in a year above students who were in the poorest 10%. And the interesting thing is that this remained constant across countries. So it was true of the United States as well as it was true of China, as well as it was true in a number of European countries. Now, the reason I mention it and the reason it just jumped out at me when I saw it, I couldn't help but think about, you know, how proud we are and how happy and pleased we are with the great work that we see the district doing as reported in the academic update. And as Nick noted when talking about the CAFA, we really are putting dollars into the classroom. And there are ways to actually measure how well District 41 does that. I've done that in my own research to show that a higher amount of dollars actually goes into the classroom. But despite those impressive results, we were all aware that there were some disparate outcomes, right? And they were based on socioeconomic status. And if we're going to address those, I mean, we really have to be honest about the need to do that. And we're going to talk a lot more about equity, and we heard a lot about it at III and other places. But it's going to take an honest assessment about what kind of interventions are going to be needed for that rapidly expanding. It's almost a 200% increase when you look at where we were with students in that free and reduced category to where we are now. That's an explosion over those 10 years. And that, to me, strongly cries out for making sure that you have the resources to do really good targeted interventions. Secondly, we have talked about the need to expand early childhood learning, and we know that that includes pre-K, and it's going to include and need. We'll need to have a robust discussion about full-day kindergarten and about what the needs will, what the needs are going to be as we project down the road. And the research, again, is just overwhelming that the best investment you can make is in those early years, not just for cognitive development, but what you might call whole child, right? Impulse control, attentiveness, persistence, teamwork, the development of character that will continue to return investment over a lifetime, and that's going to take resources to do that. Another point, and again, I know my brothers and sisters on this board are fully supportive of this and concerned about it. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention reported that the rate of suicides among the populations that we address in going up into young adulthood have increased by 56%, and since 2011, there's a 400% increase in suicide attempts amongst young people. Clearly, there is a mental health crisis. ISBE recognizes it. The state of Illinois, the Regional Office of Education in DuPage recognizes it. There is an increased number of problems and issues around mental health. That's going to speak to staffing issues. It's going to speak to intervention, and we need to be attentive to it. As people have noted, we do have, well, maybe we haven't said it so specifically, but we have overcrowding issues. We have some space needs at these elementaries, and that's why we're looking at purchasing land. And we will have a discussion, again, to underscore, a robust discussion about what should be built on that land and what's affordable. But clearly, there are space needs that we as a board have a duty to address. And then finally, you know, Julie, I think, was getting to this point. We're not operating a for-profit business, which is doing a budgetary timeline that measures and predicts year-over-year considerations. Schools operate on a, and this isn't my quote, but it's used quite a bit in the education sector, on an eternal timeline. They don't go out of existence, right? Their objectives are never ending. You're not just investing for day one, but there's this long-term development of a child, and the school's going to be there the next year, and it's going to be there the next year, and it's going to be there the next year. So I like the way Jess put it, that it's about, I think I'm paraphrasing correctly, it's this anticipation and this projection about where we need to be in the future. And for, you know, all those reasons, I think it's appropriate to vote in support of the district's recommendation. Okay? Thank all of you.
Jay mentioned abatement, and it reminded me that the FAC recommendation has always been to take the full increase. And if you are, you know,
if you have a plan,
enough,
you have some.
Yeah, if you're lucky enough and look right at your plan and you have access, use that towards something like that.
Thank you. Yeah. Good reminder, Ted. All right, Ms. Moak, roll call, please.
Mr. Curry?
No.
Mr. Estes?
Yes.
Mr. Guzman?
Yes.
Mrs. Hill?
Yes.
Mrs. Butterman?
Yes.
Mr. Wilbach?
Yes.
Dr. Brumman?
Yes. Thank you very much. The next item is board governance, learning together, and the board submitted materials to Melissa. We gave her homework, really, to take all of our notes and turn them into some beautiful learning quilt. Wow, I say quilt a lot these days.
That was a big charge. So, you know, thank you to everyone who submitted your summaries. What jumped out at me, I think, was just the vast number of sessions and topics that you covered by your attendance. It seems like people were very strategic about what they picked. I think all of the topics in some way, shape, or form were relevant to District 41, some more than others. You know, the largest, and I think what the community doesn't understand is III is the largest and most comprehensive opportunity that this board has for board professional development outside of the National School Board Conference. We are not members. I did check with Mrs. Moak. We are not members of NSBA, but this year the National Conference is in Illinois, so you may want to keep an eye on what that conference ends up looking like, and it may be worth having a few people attend if they have some wonderful offerings, because I don't know when it'll be back in Illinois again. You know, again, what really jumped out, I think everybody attended. There were some similar sessions that people went to and then some differences. But really, your session showed that you have a desire to learn about the role of a board member and also to learn about the work that other boards are doing to positively impact their district. I see, when I look at what people were talking about, that safety and equity are major importance to this board, as well as the emotional wellness of our district, our district staff. I want to thank Marcy, because since III, she has really done a lot of outreach and attendance. She started to network across the county and outside of the county to gather information about what is happening in other districts for initiatives such as the Happiness Advantage. And Marcy is...
Oh, good! I like that.
So we do pick up bits and pieces here or there and look at what's happening in the world around us to see what we can bring in, with one particular priority being on the emotional wellness of our staff and everyone's ability to come and just do the job with all its demands day after day after day. So we will be putting some focus on that. Also, I saw that some had attended the session that was done by IASB on board self-evaluation, and I think similar feedback that it sounds like their program hasn't changed much. Marcy recently learned that HumanX offers a board self-assessment tool, and also as part of that, there is follow-up coaching and PD support. It sounded very interesting and promising, so Marcy's going to get additional information embedded in that also in a HumanX offering. Jess and I had talked about this today, is an SEL instrument that we may be able to bring to District 41. We will discuss with districts who are using it and get their feedback. But it seems like HumanX is really increasing what they provide to clients and customers that can be customized. And I think the most important aspect of what they're providing is the coaching of what comes after. So you do these assessments and screeners. Well, then what? Well, they do have an answer in terms of the then what. So they provide that next step as well. So we'll be bringing more information back to the board. But, you know, there wasn't, I think the topics that really jump out are safety, equity, and emotional wellness and wellness overall. And I anticipate that those will bubble up as very important in our next strategic plan process. And, you know, we obviously can guide the process. The process should be, you know, authentic, but I would anticipate in this day and age that those topics are going to emerge as high priorities.
And one of the themes that I noticed with, particularly for the emotional well-being, was that there was, at III, and then it's reinforced in the regional ROE newsletter, is that there was always first a focus on building social emotional competencies and wellness within the staff. That was step one. Right.
because I think we all know this. You have to fill your own cup first. You have to build those competencies so you can build those relationships. And I think we have an excellent staff, but you can always do better and learn more. And the Regional Office of Education talked too that they looked at a bunch of the districts that were doing it in DuPage County, and they had themes, and the major focus was enhancing the adult SEL competence. And they also mentioned that the district uses a rubric to monitor the SEL implementation process, which my light bulb went off, because that's, you know, something we're supposed to do in terms of strategic governance, to monitor that implementation process. So it points to what those other districts did and how they highlighted it in their strategic plan. So there's a list of those districts that put it in their strategic plan, so places we can look as we do our strategic plan, and also spoke to some speakers that they had and things like that. So I just kind of wanted to, as the community hears like about investments that we might make with our staff, that's purposeful, that's research-driven, that's a best practice. It's not fluff, you know.
I want to applaud board members for the diligent use of the time to put notes together, to share them, so that we can all take a look at what one another did and give Melissa a chance to summarize. And just a particular shout out to Guillermo, who was a board member for a scant maybe 3 days and wrote a model of an evaluative report. So I'm going to make sure I allow for more time for reading when Guillermo submits reports.
I took a lot of notes.
You did. Wow, fantastic. Yeah, and thank you
for
jumping
in
here.
The power of us having those notes are when we see opportunities out there to attend sessions or workshops such as Marcy did, when we know it's an interest to the board, you know, we can watch what comes across our email and attend those things, mm-hmm. if it's something that we need to attend to bring back more information. So it's very helpful to us.
Good. Yeah, and I just got mine out to Nancy today, so I just did not have an opportunity to get those.
Nancy, I
know you said you wanted them by Friday. I just didn't have that opportunity. I didn't have the time, so
we'll get them out.
Yes, for that.
Thank you, Jack.
They're not notes. They're the outlines.
They're the
outlines.
Yeah.
All
right. Okay. Well, thank you. Any other items in the other board governance learning together?
I would like to highlight, it's not a board learning, but it's kind of a board, and I know I kind of sprung this idea out there really at a bad time with the holiday season and people are traveling, but I asked Bob to indulge me and said, you know, what do you think, would you be willing to try a service project? And this just seems like the perfect time of year for us to get out of board team of eight roles and really get in and do something for others. And so we did extend the invitation to our student board members as well, but we will be serving on December 28th, cooking for and serving dinner to families who are staying at the Ronald McDonald House affiliated with CDH. Just as a way to give back and do something for others. I know there's so much of that happens in this community already, that it's wonderful, but I think this is more of an intimate, you're actually interacting with the people that you're benefiting. And I know Jason had shared that his family actually utilized Ronald McDonald House. So it was something that's been on my mind, and I threw it at Bob really with like 30 seconds of think time. Because the calendar fills up. But I think the more that we can get out and do things like that, it just helps us be grounded better in how do we make decisions here, because it certainly shows you what true issues and challenges and struggles are. So thank you, and we'll do that again down the road with something else. And we also have a district-wide Feed My Starving Children event coming up on next Friday, isn't it? So it just never ceases to amaze me that every time you turn around, there's a different service project happening. This Saturday, we'll be picking up cars to deliver you know, all of the holiday. There's so many that I can't even keep track of them. So it's really a testament to this community and how people step up and do that. So thank you for that, and we'll look to do one again later in the year.
Thank you.
It's a good idea.
Anything else?
Do we still have on the future agenda for talking about those items that I'd mentioned before, like deciding who gets on a board, that kind of thing?
Yeah. In fact, there was in an update, you should have, all board members should have had some material to look at that, and we will be talking about it at a future board meeting. It's something we'll go through policy, and then we'll come to the board for discussion. And I had all board members had email sent to all board members with attached documents with what the plan was. But yes, Bruce, we'll get to it. Okay, thank you very much. All right, upcoming meetings: Monday, January 13th, 2020. Wow, turn the clock. Regular board meeting, 7 p.m. Monday, January 27th, regular board meeting, 7 p.m. Central Service Office. Finally, items for consideration for future agenda. Are there any items?
Before anybody does any of those, just want to remind people we will be swearing in. Our student board members will be taking the oath at the January 13th board meeting. I'm sure their parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles will come to take pictures. But that'll be a really exciting night, and they are all over Google. Erica, you're looking at me. Did I get the date wrong?
No.
Oh, no, that's right.
You scared me. I'm like, uh-oh. I was getting the look, and I'm like, did I get the date wrong? They are really excited, and they've been asking great questions so far, and so I think that'll be a really exciting night for us here.
It'll be a big moment for the board. Thank you, and the district. Okay. Then may I have a motion for the board to adjourn to closed session to confidentially discuss Section 2C5, the purchase or lease of real property for the use of the school board, including meetings held for the purpose of discussing whether a particular parcel should be acquired, and Section 2C10, the placement of individual students in special education programs and other matters relating to individual students.
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call, Ms. Monk.
Mrs. Buttermer?
Yes.
Mr. Estes?
Yes.
Mrs. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Boozma?
Yes.
Mr. Opa?
Yes.
Mr. Curry?
Yes.
Dr. Bruno?
Yes. Thank you very much. We will now adjourn to closed session.
Thank you.
Thank you, folks.
Oh, okay. Okay. I thought the microphone
was right here. Did I get it? Did it stop then?